Stephen Jill here.
Howdy.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, Entertaining Land Investment Talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today we talk about the four types of land business specializations that you can choose from and make money on. And hint, we do all four.
Yes, we do.
Should you?
Got him.
Should you do all four? Eventually.
I think so.
You know what? I'm going to list them, then we'll take the question, and we'll get into the details.
Number, you're not going to save it?
No, here's the list.
Okay.
Extremely rural, extremely inexpensive property. That's really middle of the nowhere property. Incredibly inexpensive. Number two, recreational / homestead type property. That's 2 hours to 3, maybe 4 hours drive from a major city. 20 acres, it could be a homestead. You could build a cabin on it. There's lots of stuff that you can do. This is our favorite type. Number three, infill lots. Property that's in a very urban setting that is incredibly attractive to people who build houses, home builders. Super easy properties to find, difficult to negotiate price, real easy to sell because the buyer, you know who your buyer's going to be, and there's just a finite group of people, group of builders. And number four, specialization property. Property that's pre-zoned for, let's say, a nursing home, like a Walmart type property that's zoned for big box along the freeway, or heavy industrial property or industrial park type property. Jill and I have done some of the most successful deals that we've done have been those types of properties. High risk, long-term deals. Before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
Matt wrote, I'm gonna preface this a little bit longer here, just so you know. I have two acquisitions people fielding my incoming seller calls. My first person ran out of bandwidth, and I feel like we streamlined the process sufficiently that it makes sense to bring on a second person. Bandwidth?
Meaning it ran out of gas. Ran out of interest.
So they're going to bring in another person to replace that one. It's nice to have some redundancy, and my first acquisition person does other roles in the business.
1 second, so I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
There's a reason airplanes have two engines. There's a reason that boats have two engines, long-haul boats.
It's a reason why kids have two parents, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because one of them is going to run out of bandwidth.
Is always a good idea. Redundancy is always a good idea. This is the definition of a split test, by the way. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Does anyone have more than one person as an acquisitions person?
We do.
I'm trying to find a way to streamline the business while still being personal. For example, my mail piece says name at company.com, not acquisitions at company.com or sell my land at company.com, you know, kind of thing. I like that it has a name there, you know, a real name of a person. However, as the years go by and acquisitions people inevitably leave the company, I suppose my direct mail letters will become out of date and people will be getting different people when they call in. Not to mention, I'll have to track down those emails and make sure they always forward so I don't lose leads from old mailers. Does anyone feel like they found a good way to people-proof and time-proof?
I'm going to use this.
This is good.
I'm going to use this somewhere. I'd like to people-proof this, please.
How we handle the incoming
Jill
emails.
Jill doesn't think it's that funny.
Is it better to change to generic email addresses and then stop referencing individuals altogether? Should everyone email through on team@company.com email or support@company.com? Any thoughts or advice would be appreciated. I know what makes sense to me.
Go ahead, Jill.
Okay. It does make sense to me on the sell side. sales@landstay.com, support@landstay.com, that stuff makes sense to me because you're used to having a team on sales or customer service. It's very interesting because you know what? Matt's kind of right on that. I don't see it weird on that one, but when someone emails me to want my business, which is kind of like this, with a seller, you want my property, I want it to be personal. Isn't that funny? So I like having a name on that, and we have a name on that. Right now it's my name on that.
We've got mailers in from years, decades ago, and I can tell you exactly when the letters went out with the person's name on it.
Right. And I'll tell you, years later, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter one bit. We don't. Because seller just wants some dough.
They just want the email to get answered. And the most important thing for us is, more than the email, it has been the phone number over the years. That hasn't changed. So we'll get calls going, is this, you know, ABC company? Yep. Actually, that's still us. We're here. Between you and me, friend, listener, we don't go by that anymore. But everybody who answers the phone knows that was one of our entities, 15 years ago or so. And they're just happy that someone answers the phone. So it's, that part's not so weird. And they would expect it too, that, of course, Susie's not there anymore. That was 20 years ago or 8 years ago even that you sent me the letter. Things change. I totally understand. I hope that answers the question. And that's how I would do it.
I'm taking notes. Your answers are so good.
Oh.
I'm serious. Either way, you know what the answer is, Matt? It doesn't matter. And email forwarding is like, as a real business expense, tiny. And it's real easy. So don't worry if Janice at landacademy.com is no longer there. You can forward those emails through a system. We use Microsoft 365 that couldn't make it any easier and self-contained. In fact, a lot of that stuff's just an ancillary. It's not even a cost. It's just free.
So when people, that's true, because we've had people that have left the company voluntarily and involuntarily. And all you do is thank you. I was waiting for you to get that. It's very easy to forward those emails to somebody else. So someone else is tracking and monitoring that email. And that you could do for yourself, too. So if that person leaves, that's the only thing I would say is I would never say, okay, you're the acquisitions person, put whatever email you want on there and it's going to their Gmail account and you never can keep track of it. You can never get it.
That's exactly what you don't want.
I would never do something like that. It's your company email coming through you. So Susie at mattsland.com, I prefer when you're buying the property, because they're going to call and want to talk to Susie, or at least know Susie's around, or Susie's a person, and it just seems better. And you're not, we buy ugly land trying to do this. You're really, that makes a difference. And then, like I said, on the sell side.
So all of that's true, mm-hmm. But in the end, it doesn't matter. You may increase or decrease. It's a statistical plus or minus 3%. But you'll never know because you don't do it the other way. The split test thing in the beginning, I love. Get two acquisition people, put them against each other.
Susie's
We have a person in our advanced group that hires interns, like 20 of them at a time. And she just throws all the stuff on their desks and says, whoever wins gets $100 or some number like that. It's probably $100,000 actually at her level.
I was going to say.
And they do. They just like sharks. They just eat each other for these deals. And they send mailers out. They're running like their own businesses. And you put 10 people... 10 brilliant college kids in a room like that and give them some incentive, two of them are going to win. And they're going to make you a bunch of dough. They're also going to go off and do it on their own. But
it's true.
It's not a bad model.
It's true.
Today's topic, 4 types of land business specializations. This is why you're listening. Maybe not. Maybe you're just listening just to hear... Listen to Jill.
This is one of those topics that I'm going to do my best to make it a little more shiny and fun and entertaining.
That's code for, oh my God, you're going to be boring again.
I promise I won't let it go there. I'll throw zingers in there. I'll make it good. Ready, go.
Picture a grid. And it's got, it's 4x4. You've got 4 types of land businesses down the column. And they're what I mentioned early in the show. Extremely rural property, recreational property, infill lots, and special property, like farmland. And at the top, you have, in the grid, you have price, affordability, resale time, how long you have to hold time, and profit margin, let's say. Let's start with ultra rural property. A great example is San Bernardino County, California. When I started, we were buying everything we could get our hands on, regardless of even looking at it, in San Bernardino County between $50 and $100 an acre. And guess what? You can still buy property all day long for $50 to $100 an acre there. It's very, very hard to sell for $200 an acre. Why? Because there's too many people doing it. There's too many red dots on Realtor. It's too much property for sale. It's just overdone. When I started in this, there was no, the MLS wasn't online. So we would sell it, I don't know, on Craigslist or eBay or whatever, and everything we bought sold for a lot. So that's a little, you know, I'm not saying don't do that, because there's all kinds of places, rural areas like Montana and even like Vermont, super rural areas where you can make a ton of money with this rural acreage, usually doesn't have access, incredibly cheap. And because it's so cheap, your seller base, your buyer base is huge. Who's not going to spend $4,000 for a 40-acre property in Maine? Very few people. In fact, you're going to sell it that day. Even if there is no access, and if, as long as you disclose that, there's nothing wrong with that. And if that's your niche, I mean, we made millions of dollars in this niche. Millions and millions of dollars. There's one point we're making $1 or $2 million a year doing this. And we still do it. That's the truth. We still buy and sell property in that, very specific types of property that are easy to buy and easy to sell. And we do it with the younger people in our company to teach them. It's a great way to start and learn the mechanics of doing deeds and all that. The second type, our favorite, recreational property. Is this boring?
Not at all.
All right, good.
No, I'm loving it. Do you need me for anything? I'll be right over here.
No.
Okay.
No, that color of nail polish looks great on you.
Thanks.
The second type, which we call recreational property, which may or may not be the best way to describe it, is property that's a 2 to 4 hour drive from out of town, let's say Chicago. If you drive 2 hours out of Chicago in every direction, you're going to go to northern Michigan, northern Wisconsin, or middle Wisconsin, southern Illinois, southern Indiana. There's a lot of property, 2 to 3 miles, even Tennessee, 2 to 3 miles out of Chicago. Ton, the more property that you could ever buy and sell in a lifetime, right out of that one city. The goal there is to buy property for half of what you're going to sell it. And you can very easily back into the purchase price by looking at what's for sale and what's sold in the market in places like Redfin or Zillow or Realtor. Look at completed sales, or even on DataTree through the data that we provide in our company, so in our membership. So it's not hard to get those mailers out, price them correctly, and turn property. And your market, the people that you're marketing to is huge. You know, think about how many people want to get the hell out of Chicago.
Especially
so
now.
A typical deal for us in this niche is buy for 20 or 30, sell for 60 or 70 or even 100. Jill's got multiple properties in the California area and in the center of the country where we're buying for 20, 10, 20, 30, selling for 60, 70, 80, 110. And we have deals like that closing every single month. The property's easy to close. It's easy to find a seller because they bought it for the same reason that the guy that you're going to sell it to bought it. Stuff changes in their life. They bought it 10 years ago. They're going to build a house. Just didn't pan out. Maybe somebody got ill. They have to take care of their parents. Life happens. Happy to sell it to you. Happy to take it off my hands, please. Like an old boat. Hmm. Number three, perhaps the easiest.
Thanks for not saying wife.
I was boat wife in my head.
Thank you.
Third specialization is infill lots. These are properties that are totally buildable in their state that they're in. You don't have to change zoning. There's all these other groups that talk about, let's change the zoning. Let's stick a needle in our head. Because I would rather stick a needle in my head than change zoning.
I agree.
So there are properties that are already zoned for a single, usually single family residential or small multi-tenant, like four units or less. And you've done a feasibility study on it. You know that there's probably 20 people in an MSA or a market that are there. You know this because you pulled the building permits and they're building properties. They're building single family residences, one or two or five at a time. And so you know that they're going to buy your land if it's priced right. So this is a niche that I see people doing in our, we have a whole education program on it. It's in Land Academy called Land Academy 2.0 Infilots. And so you have, what is great about this is after you do one or two deals with these home builders, they'll come back for more forever. They will never leave you alone. They'll say, I need more land. I need more land. Can we send a mailer out to this subcode? Can we please do it over here? So it's easy to get a career rolling in about 24 months that will feed you forever in these types of scenarios. And it's a closed market. This infinite desert lot, like property specialization one and two, it's very infinite. Like you can just do it forever. There's millions and millions and tens of millions, literally, of properties that you can buy. It's just all about sending the mail out. With infill lots, it's very strategic, and that works for some people's personalities. It's very strategic by MSA and by zip code. You can find out very quickly by going in a data tree or any of the data providers that we have how many vacant lots there are in a zip code. And there's maybe 20, 30, 80, 100. Let's say you buy four of them, you go to the next zip code over. And you collaborate with the guy that's going to buy it from you, so it's built in. And so that works great for certain personalities. You know, Joe and I do info lots every year. We don't seek them out as much. And it's, you're never going to hit a home run with an info lot. You're only going to hit singles. And that's okay. Some people are singles type of people. You're going to hit a home run with recreational property, property type two. One a year, maybe three a year. You're gonna stand over the deal when you're signing it on the sell side and say, well, enjoy it because it's never going to happen again. Then it happens like 8 months later. Fourth property type, specialization property. This is the highest margin property that you can possibly buy. It's what people in the olden days referred landman as.
Olden
and I mean
days.
Like in the 1800s.
Landman?
You know, you're a landman.
Oh, okay. But the landman has.
I think the railroad's going to go here, and that. It's land speculation, and so we have the luxury now where most communities, urban communities anyway, are pre-zoned, pre-planned, they're master planned. They know that the school is going to go over here when there's enough growth. They know that the industrial park's going to go over here. They know that all the farmland's going to be over here, and a master plan subdivision's over there. So you can very, very easily from a data standpoint send out mail that is, let's say, hospitality specific. All the properties that are zoned for motels or hotels in, let's say, a 3-county area, you pull the data, you can see it, and you send them mail. And I cut my career on doing deals like this. I would go to the buyer first, and I did it with long-term care and specifically publicly traded nursing homes because they have to do acquisitions. Every quarter they have to announce, oh, we're buying 14 buildings. So I'd talk to the acquisition person there. They would say, we love Tennessee, Kentucky, and Ohio. I would send everybody an offer, a data-driven offer. Four or five would come back. I'd go back to these owners of, you know, publicly traded, and they would say, yeah, we want this one and this one and not these two. And so that becomes a very high-end closed market like infilots, and it's extremely, extremely profitable. It's also some of the most painful transactions I've ever been through. They take a long time. You don't know if they're going to close. A lot of times they don't close. You get right down to the end. It takes a year to do these deals sometimes because of the approval process and the zoning and all kinds of soil testing and stuff that's got to go on to make sure they can do what they want to do with it. So the close rate's a lot lower. When they close, though, it's a 6-digit check for you. So in summary, you should do some version of all of those at some point in your career. And maybe like us, we do some version of all of them now. We just heavily lean on number two. But all the people in our advanced group at Land Academy have a lot of opinions about this. Mm-hmm. And they're all different. They have all a different way of making 6 or 7 digits a month doing this. So those are your four options. And this is actually a chapter in Land Academy 3.0.
I have nothing.
Nothing?
Well, I have little comments. I mean, that was beautiful. That was great. I don't know how, I can't make that any better,
obviously.
What are
the four types of men?
Oh, gosh.
To avoid.
Oh, no. Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Not on behalf of all women. I want to hear Jill.
Oh, what do I avoid?
Four types of men that you need, through experience, you know you should just avoid that kind of guy.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I'm not going to be personal. No.
Don't name any names.
No. You know, I had one question that I wanted. You touched on one thing that it was big enough to me. In that speech that you gave, that was beautiful, by the way. Thank you very, very much. One thing jumped out at me that I wanted to just, like, makes me mad whenever I hear it. You know those sayings that's like nail on a chalkboard? It's like, I'll give you an example. The new normal. If I hear the new normal again, I'm going to scream.
Stay safe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one, too. Stay safe every time. Like, really? That's what we're doing now? Okay. Aren't we always? Isn't this always this? And isn't normal always normal? I don't understand. I'm so confused.
We're going to bring this to the COVID. I had a lot to say, too. Okay. This is better than four types of men.
Yeah, it is. That's so. the one of the things that you brought up that is nails on a chalkboard for me is running into a property, picking, this is in your category number three, no, four, category four. I know it's agricultural, but it's going to be much better commercial. I'm going to change zoning. On what planet is this a good idea? Because let me give you the two scenarios. Number one, you don't have a sell, you don't have a buyer. You're guessing. You might drastically change a why wreck with a perfectly good property that's happily doing whatever it is zoned for because you have a hunch that you think it'd be better off zoned a different way. I think that's nuts. My other thought is, now let's just say you do have a buyer and they only will buy it if you can change the zoning. That's so scary to me too. That's a little roll of the dice. What? How long are you gonna string them along? How long are you gonna keep him happy while you're trying to get this done before he just says, I'm sorry. I bought the one across the street. It was ready to go.
This all falls under the age old myth, real estate myth, that you have to improve property to sell it for more.
Yes.
I'm here to tell you, you don't have to improve property. In fact, you shouldn't. You should just buy it cheap and resell it for more.
There are creative things that you can do that we do to improve, to do, but the underlying theme is it stands by itself. Just, you know what? Because if you have to do that, here's my last thing on the zoning. If it's only valuable if you change the zoning, you shouldn't have bought it. You made a mistake.
Let me tell you, I'm going to break some myths here. I just wrote this down because we're going to do a show on this, but okay. Here's a myth. You're going to change the zoning and sell it. It's never going to happen. Not in your entire career. People who can change zoning are companies like Walmart, and they almost always zone down from agriculture.
Wait a minute. I don't mean to interrupt you. The reason they're changing the zoning is because they're buying it for that purpose, and they're the buyer.
And they're changing it.
They're changing it for their purposes, not to sell it to somebody.
And whoever's making decisions about changing that zoning, it's prefaced with a company like Walmart by saying, "Well, we're gonna create 10,000 jobs in your market when this thing's done."
Right.
It's not just the zoning stands on its own 2 feet.
Right.
People like Shea Homes take agricultural property regularly in markets like Phoenix and change it to SFR.
Right.
That's all very feasible. It's never going to happen to independent people like
us. It's the buyer. It's not us.
People who say...
It's not the seller.
You can change some zoning, and then they do a show about it. Let's say last week. The reason that they're saying that is because they're like a lawyer. They can say, you know, we should sue these people, and it's going to take 2 years, and I can collect a bunch of fees, and that's the only motivation there. Here's myth number two. You can homestead property. Homesteading stopped in 1976 in Alaska, and before that in the main country, it was in the 20s or 30s, and even before, I'm not sure even then. That great land grab thing happened in the 1800s, it's over. You are not gonna put a fence around some property and a government property and get it for free 20 years later, it's not gonna happen.
And not pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
I had a guy argue with me about that one. I just like, keep smoking what you're smoking.
What you can do, instead of homesteading, and I would encourage you to go on to Google and look this up. This is the real estate show. Mm-hmm. It's not a joking around show. Sorry.
No, I'm with you. I'm sorry. Did I get?
No, we've just been horsing around all week, and it's like we're just talking about real estate today.
I just got in trouble.
No, you didn't. Okay. It's not that at all.
Darn it! Here comes it's sixth you grade being property. In the back of the room, just rushing back.
Jill, I'm kissing you on the air right now.
Thank
it's
you.
Not it at all.
Okay.
What you can do and should do if you're bored right now is go on to Google and look at where to get free property. And you're going to see there's tons of municipalities, usually in the deep south or in the center of the country, places like Kentucky and Tennessee and Alabama or Indiana. It's tiny little municipalities that have populations of 800 that have a defunct subdivision that's right in town. And they say, we will happily give you this property, but we need you to build a house on it by a certain amount of time. And you need to pass all these tests. And we'll give it to you for tax-free for a certain amount, but your tax is going to be X at a certain point. So they're trying to encourage people to move in and to increase their tax base and their population and all that stuff, spending power and all of it. So homesteading's dead. Getting cheap property from small municipalities is very much alive and very feasible. There's a bunch of other myths I can go into, but I don't.
Were you alluding to a MythBusters show? I think that.
Yes,
be awesome.
Either an episode or some type of thing.
I think that would be fantastic.
So to wrap this up from a real estate standpoint, Jill doesn't want to talk about dating, so we won't. The four types of, you know, you should if you're brand new, you should do the number one first. And hopefully, if it makes sense to you, the dating process and all the details, you should rapidly get into number two, rapidly, as fast as you can. And then after you're seasoned for a couple of years, three and four.
I love it. Happy you could join us today. 5 days a week, you can find us right here on The Land Academy Show.
Tomorrow, the episode on The Land Academy Show is called An Interview with Advanced Land Academy Member Bei Zhang. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.
Bei, I love Bei.
Bei has been with us since almost from the minute one, probably from month two.
Comes to every live event, without sick or not. She gets herself here. Remember that last year? She had lost her voice and it was so sweet, but she's here with us and we love Bei. And every time we do these, we've done two or three, I can't remember, with Bei, interviews with Bei like this. Everybody loves it. She has a lot to say and it's really good and different. She has a very wonderful outlook on life and how she incorporates that into her business and her family and her well-being, and I appreciate that.
She's formerly a professional brand manager for a huge company and walked away from an extremely lucrative lifelong career and is now full-time buying and selling land and houses. Mm-hmm. And I just learned that in this interview.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you find our content valuable and we appreciate your support. If you haven't already, please zip on over to our YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button.
She actually means that. Like, this isn't just an extra that we read.
No, that's
true. This really helps us.
And it's on video. It's true.
Your comments and suggestions help us to create the type of content that you're here for, and hitting the like button on your favorite episodes helps to support our channel's algorithm and gauge your interest for future shows.
We are Steve and Jill.
Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.